Wiley Publishing, in association with Imagine That Studios and Binary Studios, presents.
Do a podcast?
Do you want to do a podcast, Serena?
Okay.
Okay.
Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast. Going above and beyond, Podcasting for Dummies, with your hosts, T. Morris and Chuck Tomasi.
Welcome, 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 everyone, to Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast. I am your host, T. Morris, and joining me is my co-author and partner in crime, Chuck Tomasi. Chuck, how are you?
I'm doing awesome, T. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. This is our first show, our first recording for 2021. We're looking ahead. We're with eyes wide open. Don't anybody touch anything. Let's go in. Well, actually, after the first week, we're not going in easy into 2021, but we're off to a good start, I think. We're off to a good start. We're doing well at the house. Chuck, how are things over at Casa de Tomasi? How are things?
So far, so good. Knocking on Formica.
There we go. That's the way to do it. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about Chapter 4, doing a deep dive into podcasting on the go. The title was Go, Go, Power Podcasters, which was a nice way of saying we're going to talk about how we record on the road. It is not an easy thing to do, recording on the road, and because you want to have that studio sound, you want to have that clean sound that we're all known for in our shows and things along that nature. But there is that challenge. There is that challenge of making sure that your audio is clean and that everything is coming out right. Chuck, what do you think are the biggest challenges when you're on the road?
The environment is probably the biggest variable that I can think of. If you're at a con and you want to talk to somebody, do you have a lot of background noise? Do you want a lot of background noise? Is that part of the ambiance? So, or are you looking for something a little more secluded and private? I remember we were at Dragon Con and had an interview with Edward James Olmos. And normally when you're in the Walk of Fame, you know, the part of the convention where all of the stars are, it's very noisy. Well, we lucked out and had a Saturday morning interview at about 7:30 a.m. And there was pretty much nobody in there except those setting up. So
it's a sci-fi con. Nobody is up at 7:30 in the morning.
Well, the problem was neither was I. I was so tired. I sounded like an NPR intro to this. This is Edward James Olmos. And I start out, welcome to Technorama. It's like we stayed up way too late, and you know what you do at cons.
As you do at Dragon Con.
That was probably the lowest energy I've ever had on any publication.
Now I've got this picture in my head of Chuck DeMoss going, so tell me, Edward, how were things on Battlestar Galactica? They go to Edward James Olmos, and he's like, on Battlestar Galactica. You know, and he's got that very low energy. It comes across as low energy, but it's very high intensity.
Yeah. Wonderful man. He actually reinvented himself twice. He started out life wanting to be a baseball star.
Yeah.
And then just as he was about to turn pro, someone introduced him to guitar. And he was on the road solid for like 7 years playing music in a band. And then he discovered acting. Like, who does that?
And it's funny you should mention that. Okay. So I wasn't going to tell the story, but now I am. Edward James Olmos, I found out, like you said, big in baseball, and Bill About Battings and the Curse of the Pitcher's Pendant had just been released. So I went to his table last day of that Dragon Con, and I basically pitched him the book, and I said, I'd like to offer you this book with my compliments. He's like, and he's reading the back, and he's looking the book over, and he's like, this is right up my alley. This, and I said. So who did I make it out to? Edward? And he looked at me and goes, Eddie. And I was like,
yeah,
okay, Eddie. I mean, this is Captain Castile. This is Captain Castile from Miami Vice. This is the character from Blade Runner. And this is Commander Adama. And I'm writing Eddie with a trembling hand. And I'm just like, such a great guy, though.
He is a very nice guy. I'm getting to the point here. All of that was recorded.
Yeah, we're getting the point.
On the H2, this is like one of the original ones that T, you got it at, what, as a prize or as a vendor thing, and then you gave it to me.
It was a vendor product
yep.
for, at that time, I believe it was the second edition, and because that was the replacement for the Zoom. So, was it the Zoom?
No, this is the Zoom H2.
That's the Zoom.
This is the original. The new one's
iRiver.
That was the replacement.
So, chat, let's talk a little bit about recording on the road. As Spence in chat says, learn from my mistakes. Do not record in the lobby. So,
or an airport.
It all depends, though, on whether or not if you're recording something live, how much ambience do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have done several interviews on location, and I like the sound of the on location where you can hear the murmur in the background, that low din. But when you're doing that, you have to be very careful where you're recording that sound setting, right? It's one thing, like if you're like in an area where people are chatting around you and you get a vibe for it, you're like, okay, how close is the next table? Am I recording their conversation as well as my conversation? How bad is the sound bouncing around? More to the point, how well am I picking up my own sound? And that you weigh all those factors together. Once you weigh all those factors together, then you can decide this is a good place to interview. This is not a good place to interview. I remember when I was interviewing Robert J. Sawyer, Hugo winner, Nebula winner. Mm-hmm. Basically, if he writes a grocery list, he gets a literary award for it. Rob Sawyer and I were interviewing at a con, and I wanted that background noise, but it was so intense that Rob and I just kind of looked at each other, and Rob said, let's find somewhere else to do it. And I said,
nice.
Yeah. So we moved over to a back stairwell that was carpeted. It was perfect. And we recorded everything there, and it turned out phenomenal.
there may be technology can help with a lot of this. I mean, if you have a portable recorder like the H2 that picks up a wide pattern, you're going to get a lot of background noise, but in a noisy environment. However, if you were to, say, go to the H4 or the H6 that has XLRs and use a dynamic microphone that has a tighter pattern, it will still get some of the background noise, but you'll get the voice that you want a lot better. So think about possibly compensating for those noisy environments if that's going to be a recurring theme. That you might want a microphone attached to your portable device that you could either pass back and forth or have one for each, even better, if you're sitting at a table or something. And that will give you that background noise, but it won't overpower the person you hear. And most importantly, monitor your recording with headphones.
Monitor yourself. Make sure you can hear yourself and your guest in real time. So that brings us to another thing I think we need to clarify that I don't know if we really went into detail in the book, but I want to take some time in this episode to really talk about the difference between using a portable recorder and using a preamp. So Chuck, what is your, I know I have some experience with preamps, but what is your experience with preamps?
None. My preamps are always built into the mixer.
That's funny. Okay. All right. So let me go ahead.
I've never used an external preamp before. I think my son-in-law has something that he said, hey, would you like to use this? I'm like, I don't know where I would use that because everything I have either has a preamp built in or the equipment I'm using doesn't need a preamp.
Okay. So then I will let you take the driving wheel in asking questions. Sure. And I can go ahead and answer while I set it up. So there was a, and I can't remember the specific name of the product, but it was called the mobile preamp USB. Okay. I believe that's what it was just called, mobile preamp USB. And what this thing did was that it connected to the USB port of my then MacBook. And then what I could do is I could have two XLR microphones plugged in. And so I could run everything from my laptop. So I had the mobile USB. I had two XLR microphones. And then I had my headphones.
And that was your mobile rig. That was my mobile rig.
Mm-hmm. And the sound and the recordings I got from that mobile rig were absolutely and utterly clean.
Nice.
I mean, it was basically my studio on location. So I had some background noise, but I could control it. I could control how much that was coming in. And the preamp was powering the XLR microphones. And then I could listen to it in real time because everything was coming through my computer.
Mm-hmm.
The equivalent of that particular mobile pre, that was the name of it. The mobile pre, yeah, because I remember it rhymed. The mobile pre USB, and they no longer make it. It was one of those companies that shut down. But it turns out that Shure, and that's Shure, that Shure, the microphone people. Turns out they have, as part of their Motive series, the MVI, and that's what this is. Yes, exactly. That's Shure. Exactly. it's basically a preamp. There's also the Mackie Onyx Blackjack. It's about a quarter of this. It's about a quarter to half the size of my mobile pre USB, but it does the same thing. It works as like a bridge between your laptop and your two XLR mics, and it's fantastic. So where's the downside in that? Well, you have all the control of a studio, but then you got to make it portable.
Yeah.
And laptops are pretty heavy to begin with, but then you add in two XLR microphones, and then you add in the Shure MVI or the Onyx Blackjack. And now you have a portable rig that will take you about 15 minutes to set up from start to finish.
And is everything battery powered, or did you have to find some AC somewhere along the way?
No, nothing's battery powered. Nothing's okay. Battery powered. It's all powered by the USB. But if I'm not near a power source,
yeah,
then I got to rely on the laptop. And if it's an older laptop, that USB is going to be like, oh, hey, I just ran a half marathon. Excuse me. Glug, 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 glug.
You can hear the sucking sound of your battery going down.
Exactly. 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 And so when you're working with the portableness of it, that takes a hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you just grab an H2 or you grab a Tascam portable and just say, let's go. No, you're having to shut everything down, build it back together, and then you start recording.
Yeah. So have an idea of what level of portability you're looking for, because
right,
it could be
right,
something as small as an H2 that fits in your pocket. You're going to have some challenges with that. You can hook up an external microphone to this. In fact, for years, I did this and my headphones and an external mic, and it worked really, really well. It was very small, very portable. There are other cases where I think Ben and Keith from TG Geeks, when they go to a con or a film festival or something, they bring along pretty much their whole studio. It's portable enough. They've got a small mixer. They've got a number of microphones. They bring a table. They bring all the cables. And then they invite the guests to their room. So you can get that controlled environment. So technically that's portable because they took it out of their studio and just relocated it. I can't do that with the magnitude of things that I've got here, but I've got enough portable goodies that I could go on the road. So it really depends on what is your level of pain. Obviously, it's tougher to take your whole studio on an airplane to Atlanta when you live in Phoenix than it is from Phoenix to the Hyatt downtown Phoenix. That's easier
right,
to put in the back of your
right,
car. So think about what you are going to be doing as you do these portable recordings. It could be something as simple as turning on your phone.
and the difference, but the main difference that I wanted to talk about between preamps and digital recorders is that preamps allow you to have that studio sound and allow you to have the two external mics and allow to monitor in real time while the recording itself is going into your computer. And you can do that. You can also use the H4 or the H6. Yep. Have to record directly into them. So that is also one of the trade-offs of working with preamps. And again, the reason why you would work with preamps is because preamps tend to give you the flexibility, and you don't have to necessarily worry about the external noise. It gives you a lot more control than working with just a digital recorder. But that being said, let's talk about digital recorders. Let's talk about the advantage of working with them. So I know, Chuck, you've done a lot of stuff. You've had, as it's been mentioned in the book, you've had you've used your phone.
Yep.
You've used the H4. You've used, I'm assuming, the H6 all on the road. Apart from just being able to pick up and go, which is the beautiful thing about digital recorders, what are some of the other advantages in working with digital recorders as your portable podcasting station?
Capacity. I mean, you have a spare SD card. There's a lot of cautions to be certain. You're going to need batteries and backup batteries. You need an SD card or whatever your storage is and a backup of that. So aside from the portability, I like the fact that it's there. It's ready to go at a moment's notice. Turn it on, hold it up, and let's go. I've walked around conventions saying, hey, could you cut us an ID? Somebody doesn't have time for a full-blown interview, but you walk up and say, sure. And you get, hey, this is Gil Gerard from Buck Rogers, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama. Great, thanks. Right. You know, have a coffee on us or something. You know?
Right, exactly.
So that always ready is, it, I love that. You were going to say?
No, we did have a question from chat. This is from Resident Moon, Spence. So listening to yourself live, how do you get used to hearing yourself? Because I know hearing my own voice, and this is the key, hearing my own voice on a slight delay throws me off. So I don't listen to myself on delay. That to me is very disorienting. And if I ever am in a situation where I'm using someone else's recording setup and we are hearing ourselves on delay, this is one trick I do. By having one ear out so that I'm not, so I'm isolating only one ear, but I can focus on this other ear and listen to everybody else in real time, I can block this out. That slight delay at one time was used for a dump button when recording live and you're working under FCC laws and you can't say the seven dirty words on television or on radio. And if somebody says something like that, you dump them. And that's how you work with that delay. It is a trained talent. It is a gift. It is a skill. And what I would say is that I try to be able to monitor and listen to myself in real time. And when I can do that, it's a lot easier for me to get a balance of the background noise and put that opposite of, you know, how much gain do I need on my mic? How much gain do I need on my guest's mic? And when you're working live, that's essential to be able to hear yourself. Otherwise, if you're not listening to yourself in real time and you're using a portable recorder, that can become problematic because you're basically saying, okay, I can record this and we'll be fine. And you're kind of rolling the dice on that. You're rolling the dice to see if you have that. And Chuck, what about you? What do you think is the challenge about listening to yourself?
When you mentioned delay, sometimes it's the equipment as well. We talked about this in the book about USB, mm-hmm. the older USB interfaces could possibly be injecting a delay just from a hardware latency standpoint. Look at the technology you've got. I'm with T on this one. Whenever possible, try to do this in real time. We're doing that now. I hear exactly what I'm saying at the same time I'm saying it. And I can quickly glance at, you know, my meters and know that my audio level is roughly the same as T, so that post-production will be less painful. Yada, yada, yada. So the closer you can get to reality, the less you're going to have. I think there was a comment on one of the previous episodes where somebody said they just didn't like the sound of their own voice. I thought that's where this was going to go, but it turned into a latency thing.
Spence has got a great voice. Trust me. She's recorded for me. She has got a phenomenal voice. And as you know, Chuck, when I need voice talent for my podcasts, I only get top shelf talent. Thank you very much, Chuck. That's why I asked you instead of Craig. Anyway, so getting back.
Wow. Now we'll see if Craig listens.
Yeah. Going to find out real quick. But the other reason why it's essential to hear yourself and to hear what's happening around you in real time. I'll give you a real time story. I was asked at one of my first full-time social media jobs to put up a podcast, which I was thrilled to do. They handed me the episode and I doing the thing that I'm supposed to be doing, I listened to the entire recording. It started off fine, but then it became painfully obvious that whomever was hosting this interview was hosting it in a break room somewhere. Because as these two gentlemen are talking, two other gentlemen standing close by started talking.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, they have no idea that this bled over into the and it wasn't just a, you know, muffled conversation. I was picking up notes on like, so what are you getting Brenda for her anniversary? Oh yeah, I haven't really thought about it, yada yada yada. And I'm sitting there going, and meanwhile the focus of the two people was on cybersecurity. So we're listening to cybersecurity. But meanwhile, there's this discussion going on about what Brenda's going to be getting for her 10th anniversary. That wasn't as bad until about 10 minutes later. And then two dudes who are having a conversation walk in, and both of these guys are projecting.
Oh,
I can't even hear the discussion because these two yucca putzes are having a discussion about what was on The Sopranos the night before.
Yeah.
And then they start dropping F-bombs and things like that. I went to my boss and I said, I can't post this. It's unlistenable. And this is where you, if you ever find yourself as a podcast producer, you either have to A, put your foot down, or B, basically sign off on it and say, I take no responsibility for this. And that was what I did. I said, I take no responsibility for this episode. And I dropped it in there. And the boss did eventually come. My boss's boss came back and said, that podcast was terrible. What were you thinking? And she had nothing. She had nothing because I said, look, I've written a book on this twice. Trust me. I know something about podcasting. So yeah. You have to be able to hear yourself in real time, because if you don't, the possibility that you're going to get audio that you don't want will creep in.
If you find yourself in one of those situations and the people at the table next to you are starting to pipe up, you can either pause and resume later when that conversation dies down, or that you know, interaction that is distracting the listener, or you can relocate. Hopefully you've got enough portable stuff that you can just say, hey, let's go find a conference room or some other location like you did with the stairwell. Make sure it's not
right.
Totally echoey. And you can always tell your listener, we took a break, or maybe you put a break in your show. A lot of shows will do that. You fade out, or you put in your musical transition and you take them to the next scene, or you play somebody else's promo and you come back. So there's always ways you can do this with some creative editing so that the listener doesn't go, what just happened? We were talking and now it's echoey. Yeah. Or you can say at the beginning, put in a disclaimer. Listener, you're going to hear a couple of different things in this. The first part was recorded on site. The second we did outdoors. So when you hear transition, you'll know what's happening. You know, give them some forewarning. So there's a lot of ways you can address that even at the time of recording, so you don't have to deal with, you know, the schmutzes that are dropping F-bombs. You get yourself out of that environment and tell your interview candidate to say, hey, you know, we should really go find another place. This has gotten a little noisy. Because I've had those that sort of crept up and you don't notice it till the end. It started out real quiet and then a whole bunch of people show up. I'm like, what happened here?
So let's talk a little bit about that too, because I think something that both Chuck and I have in common when it comes to recording on site, recording on location, the big question is, okay, so when we're talking about backups, when we're talking about most of the time when you're recording, these are once in a lifetime shots.
Yes.
I mean, I can think of, like, for example, I had a once in a lifetime opportunity to interview Sam Calagione from Dogfish. I wound up meeting him two other times after that. But at that time, I thought, I am never going to get this chance again. And so, you know, I got a chance to interview Sam Calagione from Dogfish. I got a chance to interview Terry Brooks. I got a chance to interview Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, who sadly is no longer with us. Mm-hmm. What about you, Chuck? What were your once in a lifetime opportunities when you were recording portably?
A lot of them happen on site at conventions, like you say, Dragon Con is a recurring theme for me. But there's also, we did a lot of audio tours or interviews with people. We went to the Hoover Dam.
Yeah.
Some of these things take months or even in some cases years to set up to get the coordination of when will you be there and what's the schedule. And especially with a celebrity, I have to reschedule. Right. I think Dr. Robert Ballard is one that sticks out in my mind, the man who discovered the Titanic and the Bismarck, and wonderful man. But it took over 2 years to set that interview up. You don't want to screw that up. You want to make sure that your one take is the best you can get.
One of the other once in a lifetime things for me was I got a chance to interview the curator and founder of the International Spy Museum. And I tell this story because I remember so I'm just going to use this portable mic that I'll go into detail later on in the episode. But I was using the H4. And if you've ever seen the H4, it looks like a taser. It's got the weird microphones.
The XY microphones that kind of.
It's got like these X microphones.
It looks like you're going to get zapped with this thing.
He picked it up and he looked at it and he just stared at it and he goes, "What is this?" And I was telling him about the H4 microphone and he was hanging on every word. And I'm like, "This guy used to work with the CIA. This guy has seen. He knows every little nook and cranny of the spy museum and the wacky gadgets in there. And he wants to know more about my H4. This is the best day ever." But when you talk about backups, so what exactly would you recommend as backups issue that you should always have on hand when working portably?
Anytime I'm working out of my office, outside of my office, whether it's for podcasting or for doing presentations, I always make sure I have a plan B and hopefully a plan C as well. So I'm always thinking of risk management. What if I get to the customer site and I can't get on their Wi-Fi? Well, you have the PowerPoint on your hard drive, you know, that kind of thing. Be thinking about what you can do if conditions are not ideal. So when it comes to portable recorders, portable equipment, make sure that you've got enough storage, you've got backup storage, because I've been on site and my SD card just doesn't want to play that day. Great. Right. Grab the backup, do a quick format and go. Don't make your interviewee wait. Have spare batteries. Make sure you check the ones you've got before you go. So you don't just go, "Oh, these worked last time." Well, last time might have been a year and a half ago that I touched this recording. You know, certainly not doing a whole lot of portable recording these days while sequestered in our homes. So, you know, take the batteries out so they don't corrode while they're sitting on the shelf. Cables, headphones, anything that you've got. I know it adds to the bulk of traveling, but it could go wrong. And if your headphones go wrong, well, now you can't monitor your audio. Can you put in, you know, the ones from your phone? Do they have a headphone jack? Could I use those as a backup plan? Just anything that could go wrong, assume it will. And with the exception, you probably aren't going to be able to afford two mobile recorders, but hey,
now,
you know what?
Wait. I want to hit that. I know that sounds wrong in audio, but just hear me out. I want to touch on that because actually you have a personal story concerning the Hoover Dam and working portably. And in that situation, you were using your phone to record, but
the H2.
Oh, it was the H2.
Yeah, the H2.
So you had the H2, but you also had somebody's phone recording at the same time.
Yes, I think we had a camcorder going at the same time too. So
okay, that's where you have to sometimes think. You have to think, as cliche as it sounds, you have to think outside the box when you're working portably.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so let's say I have my H4 and I'm recording with this. All right, this is one of those once in a lifetime things. I'm also going to record on my phone. And if you have a camcorder going, I'm going to set a camcorder here and just record for audio purposes.
Yeah. It may not be the same level of quality, but
no,
at least you've got belt, suspenders, and duct tape.
It just accept the fact that your backup recordings will not be the same level as recording with proper XLR mics or with the proper recorder. And the reason I bring this up is because, Chuck, what happened at the Hoover Dam?
It's not coming to memory. I must have blocked it out.
Okay.
What do you remember?
I remember because I read that story several times during the editing process. But what it was that the main device that they were recording on, and this happens a lot – when portable recorders come in contact with cell phones. There was some sort of weird interference that was coming in. This happened.
Oh no, that wasn't Hoover Dam. You're thinking of the Lowell Observatory.
Yes, the Lowell Observatory. Thank you. Go for that.
We went with Ben and Keith from TG Geeks. Here we go.
Right.
And Keith had his brand new Tascam recorder, and I brought my H6, and we were talking to the gentleman there who showed us around, and we got to see the actual telescope that Clyde Tombaugh found Pluto. It was a wonderful tour. We sat down in this nice library, very quiet environment, and did the interview, and Keith called me up the next day, and he said, "Is your recording okay?" I said, "Let me listen." "Yeah, mine sounds fine." He sent me a sample of his, and it had this because he had propped up his recorder on his cell phone to get an angle at the this man's mouth, you know, so he could get a little more direction on his recorder.
Right.
And the RF signals interfered, and unfortunately my H6 must have been far enough away or had better shielding or whatever the situation was. So I gave him my recording because technically it was the same recording. We both heard, asked the same words and said the same questions. And so that was a fail safe that we had two portable recorders. Otherwise, he was going to have a bumming day because it's not, we can't just drive 2 hours up the road and go, "Can we do that again?"
Yeah, I've had that happen with some interviews that have been lost to the ages, mainly because they would get RF interference from my cell phone. Now, even if you keep your cell phone from at a safe distance from more modern recorders, there are going to be some older recorders you might be working with that will pick up on that RF interference. And it was something that podcasters struggled with in 2005, 2006. I lost count how many times RF signals have interfered with my portable equipment. So having those backups, having your phone work as a backup recorder, having your portable recorder going, having those redundancies, I can't stress that enough. I cannot stress that enough that having those backups on hand are going to be a good thing.
We have a backup right now. We are streaming this, and then T's going to extract the stream. I've also got it recording in my H6 just in case, because what I found when we're streaming,
because that's what happened last recording session.
We would have had nothing.
That's what happened last recording session. There's also nothing.
There's also when we do streams, for whatever reason, it seems like there's always kind of this cutoff. It's a bias to one speaker or the other. If two people are talking, it will cut one out. So you're not hearing the true conversation as I hear it or as T hears it. And I sometimes I'm disappointed by that because I'll ask a question while T's talking and you can't hear the question. We'll just keep going. And to the listener, that can be very confusing.
Right. And you just have to sometimes massage the audio. You have to, why, when people say, "Oh yeah, record it, then post it." That's not the way I podcast. The way I podcast is I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to make sure that I can edit it. And then we're going to, then once it's all done, then I will release it out into the wild. So in closing, Chuck, what would you say, were there any particular topics or any particular subjects that you wanted to touch on that maybe we glossed over or couldn't get to in the chapter on portable podcasting? I'm pretty proud of that chapter, as you would imagine.
It's one of my favorites because it has gadgets.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's gadget galore. Absolutely gadget galore. And also, too, chat, if you all have any questions about podcasting portably, now's a great time to ask them as we're getting to wrap up. So, Chuck, were there any parting thoughts you wanted to give?
There's going to be, more than likely, unless you're using your portable recorder all the time for every recording, there's going to be this shift in workflows. I've got a certain workflow set down when I do my studio recordings, but when I'm on the road, it changes a bit. Not significantly, because even in the studio, I'm recording to a portable recorder, so I take the SD card out. I generally, I'm old school because I still don't trust the software not crashing. we mentioned that
Audacity. A little bit of paranoia goes a long way in production.
Yeah, but what I found in the last few weeks is I have a loose connection on the mixer that was cutting out one channel periodically through the interview. So you'd have two tracks, you'd have one track. You'd have two tracks, you'd have one track. I fixed that since, so we should be stable on that. There's always going to be some some risk or element, but the workflow may change. So understand, am I recording directly to the computer where I can just jump in and edit that audio file, or do I have to first transfer it and then change formats or possibly levelate it, that kind of thing. So it may in fact impact your workflow a bit.
And Freud.dev in chat says, I'm a dev. I don't trust software not crashing. So I think it's only fair.
It's written by humans.
One of the things I would say in closing would be that, don't let that lack of your studio bells and whistles affect you when you're podcasting or in fact streaming content creation of any time on the road. I say this because one of the what I thought was one of the best streams that I did in 2020 before COVID really hit was I was strapping my phone onto a Steadicam, and I did this morning walk with a group of authors that I was at a retreat with. And all I did was just walk along the beach, and I didn't even point and I streamed it. I didn't point the camera at us. I pointed it out towards the ocean. Oops. And I just said, come on a walk in the ocean with the tea monster.
Okay.
And it was literally like an hour of just walking along the shore. I got some of my best analytics from that. It
really?
Was like ASMR with writers. And what was even better was on the last walk that I streamed, we saw dolphins, and I caught it on stream. You can actually see dolphins.
Oh, neat.
But the thing is, I don't have the bells and whistles that you see here. I didn't have the Podcasting for Dummies cover or the Twitch for Dummies cover or Gaming with a Team Monster and the Bitly for my Discord. And there's some people that really get uptight. I don't have my alerts. I don't have all the bells. It doesn't matter. You're creating content.
Well, that's kind of where I was going. You mentioned the dolphins. The being out of the studio and being on the road can really unlock some creative ideas.
Really can. It really, really can. And I challenge podcasters everywhere. If you have a podcast, you know, make yourself portable. And one of the things with one of the things that Froy and Spence I think can attest to is that sometimes your podcast is nothing but portable. I know Froy does a lot of interviews with or has been working with Code for Puerto Rico is an initiative for open source projects, and it's obviously based in Puerto Rico. And Froy has now, granted, this past year, he's been probably been doing everything with Zoom and with Skype and those types of interviews, which in its sense is kind of working portably. But once we're able to get out, once we're able to actually, you know, see each other safely again, you're going to see more and more interview podcasts, I think, popping up. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me at all if in the post-COVID era, you're going to see a lot of podcasts about surviving the COVID pandemic. We can chuckle about it, but I kid you not, Chuck, I will lay down $5 right now in this podcast. You're going to see all these different podcasts on surviving the pandemic or, you know, surviving COVID and all you're going to see. And it's going to be people actually like on the road, holding interviews, hosting interviews in real time. And I challenge you to work portably, because it really gets you thinking creatively and looking at new ways of creating an atmosphere and being able to do the same things you do in studio, but doing it on the road. So thank you, everybody, for joining us for this episode of Podcasting for Dummies, the Companion Podcast. Remember, you can pick up the fourth edition of Podcasting for Dummies, the Companion Podcast. Remember, it's the one with the cute lady on the cover.
Wish I knew her name.
Wish I knew her name. Getty Images. We'll just call her Getty. We'll just call her Miss Getty. And it sounds a lot better than Miss Deposit Photos, so I'm just going to say that right there. But anyway, it's got Miss Getty on the cover, and it's the fourth edition of Podcasting for Dummies. You can pick that up at bookstores everywhere, both brick and mortar and online, as well as, of course, Amazon.com. And you can subscribe to this podcast on podcastingfordummies.com. This podcast is available on Apple Podcast, on Google Play, on Stitcher, and now Spotify. You can listen to us on Spotify now, everybody. And remember, folks, the Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast, is protected by a non-commercial, no derivative, share alike United States 3.0 license. And you can find out more about that license at creativecommons.org. So on behalf of Chuck Tomasi, thanks for listening, everybody. Pod on.